Mother's Day in the age of Me Too and sisters and daughters rising up everywhere. Who run the world? Beyonce. Stay tuned.
I believe that we are in the middle of a third reconstruction, and people wouldn't be fighting this hard if we were weak. I'm not just talking about black people. I'm talking about the possibility of a whole new electorate rising. And so from Mother's Day to June 21st, which is the anniversary of Swanna, Trainer, and Goodman being killed, we are starting the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival, not in commemoration of what happened 50 years ago, but launching a multi-year movement. It will be direct action, civil disobedience, power training, how to build power, and voter mobilization in 32 state capitals and the District of Columbia.
That's the Reverend William Barber announcing the relaunch starting on Mother's Day 2018 of the Poor People's Campaign. We'll hear more from him later in this hour. I figure he's somebody who knows what it means to respect your mother, yours and everybody else's. It's appropriate that Mother's Day was chosen to launch the Poor People's Campaign. The holiday was originally conceived in honor of peace and public health activist Anna Jarvis. Her daughter became so incensed when the idea caught on, a national holiday honoring mothers, embraced and promoted by Hallmark cards and candy manufacturers, she actually staged boycotts of the holiday that she had conceived. I bet her mother would have been proud of her. On today's program, we'll hear some advice from Mom and some memories. First up, Aaron Wenger meditates on three different kinds of memory: what you hear, what you see, what you feel.
My memories of her can be ordered. There are picture memories, most inexact of all, a play in black and white. Cortex memories, inexact, but maybe mine. Maybe just stories told by adults to a child who wanted to hear. Then there are bone memories, way beneath waking thought, coming back to you as unsought as a smell along the street that speaks of home or perfume from a love left. In picture memory, I see her dressed up, probably on a Sunday afternoon, because they never dressed up except for Sundays, funerals, and weddings. The picture may show the shadow of the taker, because you were supposed to put the sun in back for those old brownie hawk eyes and Polaroids. Everyone's smiling because the taker said so. There may be cows in the background because the pasture was right outside the summer kitchen and the depth of field of those cameras went to infinity. In a group picture, I see her outside the one-room schoolhouse at West Liberty, a 9-year-old in the front row for the short kids. Or she's a 12-year-old snapped by granddad by the garden gate. Or she's 20 and dressed like a scared flapper with a young man and another girl by the young man's Model T. No pictures with her poor husband. Finally, she's a wife with me as a 1-year-old and a beaming second husband by our sides. Picture memory of life caught on slow film as life snapped by. In cortex memory, I see her as they all told me. Stories of flame red hair, of milky skin, of a temper, of a lust for God and for life. Married young to a guy named Jay, she found no love of God in him and not enough lust for life in her, it seems. In these stories turned memory, she finds my dad as a semi-illiterate, undereducated, but God-touched preacher from the Church of the Brethren in Pennsylvania. He finds her as a Sunday school teacher in a little storefront congregation yearning to feel that they are indeed saved. She and the preacher fall in love. Jay is abandoned. A divorce is arranged, and she and the preacher are asked to leave the church. They move to Granddad's home place. Dad takes a job with the Penn Railroad. She births first a stillborn little girl. Patricia was meant to be her name, and then a year later births me. She had red hair. Long hair, softened red late summer hair, like sunlight setting behind maple trees, like wild strawberries along the creek path, showing a little of the passion binding him dearer than even a Bible bound them both. This fire held them one to another, and both to a shared God. Both Bible thumpers, he with dark eyes that flashed hotter than lightning in June, her with green summer smolder that stopped Sunday school kids in their tracks and made believing visible. In picture memory, I see her, Dad, and me in a little walker, maybe a year old, summertime, she in a cotton summer dress kneeling by me, happy, smiling, Dad in old Bill overhauls, happy, smiling, and confused as new dads are, a taker shadow at their feet. Me senseless and joyful as only a baby in the sun can be. In cortex memory, I know her dead 6 months after that summer picture. Dad destroyed, begging her sister to take care of me at the graveside. People would often pity me, saying how terrible it was for me to lose my mother. As a 4 or 5-year-old, I would try to reassure them, maybe just get them off my back. I would tell them that was no big deal. I never knew her, couldn't remember her. Don't pity me. I hadn't really known her at all, I said. Only from pictures, only from stories. Ah, well, now I'm old, and I know more about memory. Know that picture memory can lie, and that cortex memory can be forgotten and confused in the telling of things. Bone memory, though, lies deeper, hidden by the physics of things, hidden away like scents waiting for discovery as a stranger walks by, as a kitchen door is opened, waiting for discovery in an unthought gesture that is not yours, showing up at random in a peripheral vision of life. In my bones, I still see her red hair, feel heat and life from her poured into me, see her in the ache of spring, nor in the music of things, and belief past all the physics I know. Bone memory is driven by green eyes to seek the intrinsic rightness of life, the godliness within all life, and the connection with life somewhere within me. I was wrong, you see, to ever suggest, even out of a child's kindness to strangers, that it was no big deal.
Mother, remember the night that the dog got blood on the floor, fleas on their balls, and you cry till the morning. So may the sun rise, bring hope where it once was forgotten. Suns are like birds flying always over the mountain.
You're listening to Stay Human on Northern Community Radio. I'm Michael Goldberg. It's the Mother's Day edition, and though she's gone now, I still hear my mother's advice. Just wait, she would say when I shrugged off her advice. Just wait, you'll find out, she warned me. The joke version is the mother who says, my one hope is that someday when you grow up, your children will give you as much heartache as you've given me. Not much of a joke, really. Actually, when I did grow up and have children, she gave them the exact same advice she'd given me. First, get a haircut. My son is African American. He's grown beautiful long dreadlocks. She saw him once or twice a year and generously tried to improve his life each time by asking, why don't you get a haircut? She'd been a little less subtle with me. Get a haircut, that's one, and listen to your father. This second rule was somewhat ambiguous. It could mean, don't listen to his words. Listen to what I'm telling you he actually thinks but doesn't say. I'm not proud of it, but when she said this to my sons, listen to your father, I thought she was very wise. One, get a haircut. Two, listen to your father. And three, have a piece of fruit. This is advice I still take several times a day. I'm lucky, I guess. My friend Eleanor told me she got a divorce because her ex-husband had grown up with a mother who told him whenever there was a problem or something was bothering him to go lie down, take a nap. It was impossible, Ellie told me. Something comes up with one of the kids or goes wrong with the house. We have to make a financial decision. He's going to go lie down, take a nap. Fine, I told him. Go get yourself a quiet studio apartment. Take a nap all day. No one will bother you. Ellie's kids are doing just fine, by the way. She and her husband were both musicians, and so are her sons. Do what you love, she told them, and they took her advice. How could they go wrong? So listen to your mother's advice. She might be wrong, but listen. Try to imagine her life, how you look to her, so that you can live up to what's best in her that's in you. And have a nice piece of fruit.
Anybody arrived at our house, they usually ate supper, and her rule of thumb was, for company, there's always enough, just throw in another potato. My mom is Justine Dragovan, and she lived to be almost 103. She said, when you stop being curious, you are dead. And that was because she just didn't like talking to older people who she felt were old because they didn't have that little spark going so that you could have a conversation about more than how your constipation was. So that's my mom's.
My mother, Sophie Paris, who's no longer with us, gave me lots of great advice. And it was mostly around the type of girl I should be seeing and the type of cooking I should be doing. There was probably much more advice on cooking, and it always involved using more garlic and more paprika. You know, she would watch me cook something, and she would always tell me, well, maybe you should add some more, and, you know, it'll taste a lot better.
My mom was June Landon, and the best advice she gave me, she gave to our whole family on her 90th birthday. And we said to her, June, if you can tell us one thing, give us some your best advice. And she said, just be nice.
My mom's name is Gail Addison. She always taught me, when I have a problem, to slow down, take a breath, and find a solution. She's still teaching me that. Lucky for me, she never gives up.
My mom is Karen Noyce, and sometimes I wonder if I'm doing the right thing as a mother. She always has the right things to say whenever I feel like I'm doing something wrong or I'm questioning myself about me being a mother myself. And it's always nice to be able to go back to her and get advice, and she's always right. She always just tells me to follow my heart and follow my dreams, and she tells me how good of a job I'm doing constantly, and she's just always there.
My mother is Winifred Jane Featherstone Latimer. I'm the oldest of seven children. And my mother taught us a lot of things, but in a very gentle way. She wasn't an outspoken kind of bossy mother. She was a very gentle mother. And the thing that I can think about her is she taught us to see beauty. She taught us to see beauty in people and in nature. And I know many of your listeners probably know about my brother John and his ability to know about nature, but we all do. And a story that kind of reminds me about Mother is she knew all the animals. She watched every sunrise, every sunset. She still does. And she said one day I was visiting her and she goes, oh, there's my little prairie dog. You know, he has a lame leg. I mean, she knew them all like they were personal. Also about people, she never talked down about anyone, regardless of their status or whatever behavior they might have had. And I remember once I was trying to gain favor with her by telling her about one of my classmates that had done something. She had dropped out of college, and I knew my mother really wanted us to be in college. We all most went. And and she said to me very clearly, and I never forgot, I even remember we were standing in the kitchen, and she said, you can't judge what is behind that decision. It has no bearing to what you know. You can't make that judgment. It was like, okay. And I mean, that stuck with me forever.
Thanks to Sally Latimer, Emily Finken, Joe Addison Goldberg, Peg Landon, Dan Paris, and Chris Friedlieb for sharing so much good advice from some really cool moms. You're tuned to your Northern Community Radio Service, KAXE-KBXE, streaming at kaxe.org. Our program is Stay Human, heard at this hour every Sunday. Many of our local programs, including this one, receive support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And many of our programs, also like this one, are produced by volunteers, sharing what we love for the love of it. One of our volunteer producers is my friend Charlie Parson. I got him remembering his childhood in Appalachia a few weeks ago, and he told me this about his mother, Marie Louise Miller Parson.
My mother, in looking for things to do, became the, I'm not sure what she was called. She ran the Girls Club in Johnson City, and the Girls Club was a philanthropic organization to try to teach very poor girls hygiene, domestic skills, things like sewing and cooking, and how to stay healthy and hopefully how to not get pregnant. But basically, she got a grant, and the grant let her buy a Chevy Suburban, and she would take the girls home and we could fit about 13 of them in the Suburban. And I never can forget these two girls that we were taking home on the east side of Johnson City, and we went out on a street, and the street turned into gravel. And the girl said, okay, turn left here, and we turned onto another gravel road, and then they said, now turn right here and go down in the creek. And we went down in the creek, and they said, now go down the creek, and we went down the creek a couple hundred yards, and there was a branch in the creek, and they said, now go up the left fork. And we drove up the left fork, and there was a house, and there was not a dock, really, just a concrete block step. And they said, thank you, this is where we live. And they hopped out, and the creek was their water supply, and where anything that they disposed of was disposed of. And that was kind of, wow, just that was who my mother was trying to give a better life to. And she had a lot of heartache because the kids would be there and they'd be really good until they were 11, 12, sometimes 13, and then suddenly they wouldn't show up, and she would find out that they were in the family way or something else that had gone on. But it was just a great thing that she did, but a rough thing that she did. And she got friends of hers who were the wives of bankers and registered nurses and people to come in and participate in the Girls Club of Johnson City during the time that she did that for about 4 or 5 years. And I got to ride along because after school was out, what am I supposed to do too? So I just come along, and sometimes I learned how to sew and I learned how to cook, and I had a good time. But never forget the conditions that the kids came from. My mother was orphaned at 18. Both of her parents died of heart attacks when they were in their early 40s. And that would have been 1938. And so she was valedictorian of her high school class. She had planned on becoming a doctor. But with their deaths and no income, she sold everything that her parents owned and got to go to college for the first year on that. The next years she had to work, and she worked as a big band vocalist. She was a mezzo-soprano and toured around the South singing with big bands, and then met my dad at Troy State Teachers College. And my dad was an operatic baritone who grew up in Minnesota and went to Morehead State and on a full scholarship, but wound up teaching geography at Troy State Teachers College because that's where he could find a job, and Mom wound up marrying him and actually never did finish college. But she knew a lot, and she had a passion for medicine. Fortunately, I fell into all sorts of accidents that she got to repair. The earliest one was when I was 3. I fell into the lawnmower and took cuts off all 10 fingers, and she just bandaged them up because she was in the middle of an advanced first aid class and needed practice. And that was just kind of the way she was. It didn't cause her to blink. Just here we go, deal with it, learn to live with it, make do. She learned how to sew when I was another 2 years older before I realized that she had sewn my shirt, her first shirt ever, and the buttons were on the side. They would be for women, not men. I didn't realize that was a problem, but she didn't know the difference either, so there you are.
Thanks to Charlie Parson, and thanks to his mom, too. Here's the Grateful Dead with their version of Merle Haggard's sad story.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blow and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I've bound. No one could change my mind, but Mama tried. One and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, Mama seemed to know what lay in store. In spite of all my Sunday learning, for the bad I kept on turning, and Mama couldn't hold me anymore. Then I turned 21 in prison, doing life without a parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried, Mama tried, Mama tried. Try.
so. Yeah, my mom had a love. She tried so very hard to fill his shoes. Working hours without rest. Wanted me to have the best. She tried to raise me right, but I refused. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right. Mama tried, Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but I plead and I deny that there's only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried.
Sit at the welcome
table.
I'm gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days. Hallelujah. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table. Sit at the welcome table one of these days. Children gonna sit together.
Yes.
All God's children gonna sit together one of these days. Hallelujah. All God's children gonna
sit together.
All God's children gonna sit together one of these days. One of these days.
That's the Blind Boys of Alabama. I've been hearing a lot lately about how the government is stepping up the war on the poor. War directly by cutting support for food, shelter, health, and indirectly, I guess, in a thousand ways, suppressing wages and dismantling education, consumer and environmental protections. There are too many cuts and gouges and even disembowelments for me to try to keep track of. And then, you know, there's just the exhaustion. In the past few weeks, I've had three different friends, all of them people who really are well informed about things, tell me that they're drastically cutting back on their news intake, not tuning out completely, but severely limiting their diets of daily news. Self-protection. The giant gym and fitness chain Lifetime announced this year that they are removing all cable news programming from the big screen TVs in its 130 locations around the country. The company's tweet said they were committed to provide family-oriented environments free of consistently negative or politically charged content, and that the decision to make the gym a news-free zone was consistent with their, quote, healthy way of life philosophy. I've long believed that the news is bad for me and probably bad for everybody's health. I try to mute the clatter as much as I can. There's a horrifyingly funny moment, though, in a TV comedy I was watching where three people all get dinged at the same time and they open up their phones and they read about the latest news, a terrible earthquake in South America somewhere. And as they're looking at the video and reading about the horror and the thousands of people killed or homeless, one says to the other, "Is that the latest iPhone you've got?" And all three of them immediately, enthusiastically launch into a discussion of their devices. We've got to look away, but we can't turn our backs.
Tube.
That Joni Mitchell song I find haunting and pretty upsetting, I guess, every time I hear it. Innocence is just such a hard thing to think about. At a certain point, nobody is, right? Nobody's innocent. And at the same time, all of us believe that we are. We maintain that we are innocent. I think we could hardly function if we didn't believe in it, cling to it no matter what. I mean, if you see a kid floundering in the water, you jump in, you pull them out. But if you know for sure that kids are going under every day, right in your town, but you don't see it, you don't do anything about it, are you innocent? I was blown away this week to learn about the innocence of the next CIA director, Gina Haspel. Not that she was innocent of any wrongdoing related to the torture of suspects. I mean, that didn't surprise me, because if she's guilty of that, so are Bush and Cheney, and so are we all. Therefore, let's put that off the table. Understood. No, what surprised me was that she is innocent of destroying the videotapes that she destroyed right after the existence of the black sites for interrogation was exposed by the news media, and then the Senate proposed an independent investigation of CIA treatment of detainees. That's when the tapes were destroyed. And now they're going to put her in charge. She's innocent of that because, as she says, her moral compass is very strong. Artifice, brutality, innocence. Joni Mitchell says they're the great stimulants of the exhausted, but not everybody is exhausted. Mother's Day 2018 marks the launch of a national call for moral revival from the New People's Campaign. It's a relaunch of the Poor People's Campaign that Martin Luther King committed himself to in 1968. Reverend William Barber came to national prominence some years ago when he built the Moral Mondays movement in North Carolina, a racially and religiously diverse coalition demanding social justice and holding repeated demonstrations and actions. Barber says that American history is a call and response. In the first Reconstruction after the Civil War, freed slaves and poor whites banded together and rewrote the constitutions of the Southern states, setting a course for public education and workers' rights, and that was followed by the Ku Klux Klan, of course, voter suppression, and Jim Crow. The second Reconstruction, he says, was in the 1950s and 60s, led to the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, and the War on Poverty, followed by Richard Nixon's Southern Strategy and decades of racialized policies. And, he says, our current moment is a third Reconstruction.
We must speak up, stand up, and vote up like never before. I'm telling you, it's movement time in America. First, we must have a movement, direct action, and civil disobedience campaign. I believe this. It took mass civil disobedience in the first Reconstruction and the second Reconstruction. And this mass civil disobedience is not about saving a party, but about changing the moral narrative. When people can run for office and look you in your eye and say, elect me and I'll take your votes and rights. Elect me and I'll snatch your health care away. Elect me and I won't even vote for you to have a living wage. I mean, tell you right up front. That's not a political problem alone. That's a deep moral issue. And there are five areas that we believe in our movement that interlock. They're interlocking. Somebody say interlocking. Interlocking. They're interlocking injustices. Systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, the war economy, and the false moral narrative of Christian nationalism and white evangelicalism. Those five issues, they hook together. And you can't separate one from the other. You can't address racism without addressing systemic poverty. You can't address poverty and have some kind of neoliberal critique that doesn't address racism. You can't do one without the other. They connect together. And we must have a massive civil disobedience movement of all different kinds of people. And that we must go to the places of power. Not out just outside and away, but in the very halls of power. I'm talking about in Ryan's office and in McConnell's office and in state capitals. Ezekiel said, who will stand in the gap? Jeremiah 22 says, I need you to go down to the king's house
and demand that they stop hurting the poor and stop hurting the immigrant and stop hurting the vulnerable. And we must have moral leaders and impact. But I'm not talking about building a stage for somebody to come and speak on behalf of impacted people, but impacted people having the stage themselves. And so from Mother's Day to June 21st, which is the anniversary of Swanna, Trainer, and Goodman being killed, we are starting the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival, not in commemoration of what happened 50 years ago, but launching a multi-year movement. It will be direct action, civil disobedience, power training, how to build power, and voter mobilization in 32 state capitals and the District of Columbia.
I have a feeling I'm going to want to follow the news, that news anyway, for the next few weeks. Early signs, green shoots of the New People's Campaign. 50 years after Martin Luther King Jr. said that the Vietnam War was an interlocking issue with civil rights and social justice and called for a radical revolution of values, Reverend Barber is preaching the gospel today and working to bring us together.
And we've got to stop fighting each other and start fighting extremism. And we've got to recognize that the people and the extremists, I don't call them Republican, I call them extremists, because my granddaddy was a Republican, but he was a Lincoln Republican. He was a Teddy Roosevelt Republican. I call them extremists. But whether it's extremists on the Republican side or the scared folk on the Democratic side, whoever they are, we have to stop fighting each other and fight racism and sexism and xenophobia. And we got to understand if they can come together for the love of money. And what you're finding out is they don't have to agree all the time to come together. Sometimes we make the mistake. We got to have 99.9% agreement. But we have found out that these mean folk, they will come together for the love of money, won't they? You can talk about their mama, but as long as he signs a tax bill, they'll come together. And I stop by to tell you, if they are cynical enough to come together, we better be smart enough to come together. And come together for love and justice, and it's time for us to come together around this broad agenda, and it's got to be everybody. Now, how you know you got to come together? Because the Bible told me so. You see, in the 22nd chapter of Ezekiel, since we're in a church tonight, God said, I look for somebody to stand in the gap, and I could not find anybody. The chapter ends in a miserable way. But then 15 chapters later, in the 37th division of Ezekiel, God says to Ezekiel, I know where you can find somebody to beat back the wolves. I know where you can find a group of people that will beat back the lying preachers, but you got to go down in the valley of dry bones. In other words, you got to go down in that place they call the shithole. I mean, you got to go down there. And if you go down there, you're going to find some bones down there. Now, I know they look like bones. They look like dry bones. They look like the wolves have torn them apart. But they are the people down there. And these bones in the valley, they represent the bruised and the battered and the beaten down and the oppressive by the oppressive forces of the world. They are the people who've injustice looked like injustice has won. They are the people whose spirit and life has been taken out of them by the constant battering of the language and the actions of hate and injustice. Dry bones. Those who are poor, who have been told their poverty is their own fault. Dry bones, children among us who've been discounted and criminalized because of the color of their skin and the economic location. Dry bones, the sick who have heard mean politicians declare that giving people health care is un-American and a form of communism. Dry bones, the workers that are beaten down by the battering rams of anti-union forces and corporate greed. Dry bones, the immigrants who've been called aliens and vilified in a land of immigrants where people want to put rules in place now that their own great-great-grandmama couldn't have passed if they were trying to come in there. The dry bones are the gay people and the transgender people who've been told in so many ways that they're hated and that God doesn't love them and neither does America. The dry bones, African Americans who see mean and drunk politicians working to take away their voting rights. Dry bones, people who have voted for people time and time again, but then those people turn their backs on them once they get into office. Dry bones, there are dry bones lying all around, but God says to Ezekiel, that's your army. That's the army, those dry bones that are down there. And they might look like they're dry, and they might look like they're dead, but dry bones still have ears. And if you'll go down in the valley and preach to the dry bones, then those dry bones will come together. I'm telling you, I've been preaching to the dry bones. I went out to Seattle among the homeless white folk, and there's a young girl out there that said, Reverend Barber, I'm joining the movement because I'm the white trash that they threw out but forgot to burn. Lord have mercy. I went down to El Paso, and the immigrants down in Texas, we walked in the middle of the Rio Grande River, and they're joining the movement. I went to the Apache Nation and sat in the middle of the circle and played the drums and sat there with the elders and the 500 Apache Nations that have been sending out the cry that it's time for us to come together. Went with the National Welfare Rights Workers in California and Detroit, and those welfare rights workers that were part of the original Poor People's Campaign, some of them are 60 and 70 years old, they said, we ready for one more battle. Went down to Alabama, and there's a mother whose girl died in her arms because Alabama did not expand Medicaid expansion. And she said, my baby didn't die for anything. I'm ready to march. I'm ready to stand up. I'm ready to try. I wonder, are there any dry bones in here? Anybody that needs health care, or you know somebody needs health care, you better come on down here, because this the army. Anybody that works hard every day, but you don't make a living wage, come on down here. Anybody that wants more education for your children, come on down here. Come on down here. Any brothers that the system did you wrong and locked you up, but they should have kept you, because now that you're out, you're going to fight. Look at, I'm telling you. Will the dry bone just hook up a little bit? Because they tell me in the valley that the foot bone connected to the ankle bone. You know what I'm saying? And the ankle bone connected to the knee bone. What I'm trying to say is when the black and the white and the brown and the red and the yellow and the Christian and the Muslim and the Sikh and the Hindu and the Jewish and the gay and the straight and the southerner and the northerner, when all these dry bones get together, they tell me there'll be a shaking in the valley. There's going to be a shaking on Capitol Hill. There's going to be a shaking on Capitol Hill. There's going to be a shaking in state capitals, and we are going to make the third reconstruction a reality, and we're not going to give up on the American project. Too many tears have been cried. Yeah. Too much blood has been shed, yeah. And the dry bones are right. There's an army rising. There's an army rising. There's an army rising. There's an army rising. And this army will be able to break every chain. Let's go out and come up from the valley.
Oh, when I get up on the mountaintop, don't you know, in the middle of the air, I'm going to make my way and go flip it in the flop, you know, in the middle of the air, this ain't easy, girl, saw the wheel, he saw that wheel, way in the middle of the air, easy, girl, saw the wheel, oh, in the middle of the air,
Happy Mother's Day from the Dixie Hummingbirds and from me and from Prince, too. Thanks to our local storytellers this hour, Aaron Wenger and Charlie Parson. And thanks to you for tuning in for some preaching from Reverend Barber. My name is Michael Goldberg, and the project is called Stay Human.
Come. which you like. Now's the time to find a rhyme. It's got a reason and freeze a mind. From angry thoughts to raises kind. If we all want to change it, come on, get in line. Next time we march, kick it down the door. Next time we march, all of what we're marching for.
Got a baseline, if blind, even in braille, I would create rhymes. This time, gonna excel and not forsake mine. We kinda like some black Einsteins with a great mind. See, I done figured out the plan, yeah, the man on the media, the dictionaries and encyclopedia, the judges and the courts, referees and the sports. The UN ain't a friend of people of dark skin, so they send all the warriors and the leaders to the pen, and the rest to Afghanistan, Africans and Mexicans. That officer you questioning, the envy should be resting in. Better watch your mouth in the South, I'm suggesting it for your protection, man.
Drain dry. Bob died, I celebrate it like at a birth. Maybe we could take our race to places of some worth. Keep the silence as loud as a bomb can be reversed.
Yeah.
We usher in a new day, bustin' in a new way. Used to be like Cool J, couldn't live without my radio. But now, I can't live with my radio, so pow. Shot it in the chest, watched it die to my couch. It had a bulletproof vest, I shot it in the mouth. Revolutionary with the planet, speaking mighty loud. Speech is the name, understand what that's about. Two black plus two strong, it equals let me selling out.